The Anton Savage Show with Kearies.ie on News Talk.
I'm joined by a man who has had an extensive commute to join us here, given that this is his both home and constituency, that being Minister Stephen Donnelly. Minister, good morning.
Anton, good morning. Welcome to Greystones.
Thank you. The weather's always like this, is it?
It's always like this. The sea is always warm.
You going to swim?
I am going to swim, yeah.
Genuinely, you're going to swim?
Yeah, I went for my first swim last week, and it wasn't just cold. It was really painful, but there were two, I'd say, 10-year-old girls, like, just swimming away, having the crack close by, so I had to
it does put it up to you.
I had to keep it all in. So I'm going to go after this, yes, I'm going to go for my second swim of the year.
There is much to discuss, including the new medical records app to give an overall picture of medical records and access to medical records for patients across the system. Before that, the big issue this week has been, and the big issue for several weeks now, has been University Hospital Limerick, the chaos in A&E, the overcrowding in A&E, and the deaths that have resulted therefrom. You don't look optimistic in anything that I have read that you have said about there being a solution coming anytime soon.
I am optimistic. We have to be optimistic because of the amount of capacity we've put in and the reforms that we're now seeing being driven by the clinicians in the hospital. So HICWA did a report there probably about 6 weeks ago. And what they referenced was there's a huge amount more capacity in UHL than there was even just 2 years ago. But critically, the reforms that I and others have been looking to start, the things that we know have worked in Tullamore, in Port Laois, in Waterford, in other hospitals around the country, they weren't happening in Limerick.
Why?
I think various legacy reasons, various cultural reasons, all manner of reasons. But essentially,
but crime amongst them, what? Are we talking hospital management?
I think there needed to be pretty significant changes in how the hospital was run. There needed to be changes in culture in the hospital. When I met them, when I was appointed, they put it up to me, I think very fairly, and they put it up to government. And they said, look, we need a lot more capacity than we have. We need more beds, more doctors, more nurses, more emergency medicine consultants. And I agreed with them. And so we've put more capacity.
But sorry, that doesn't sound like an administrative problem then. That sounds like a capacity problem and a funding problem.
So it's both, right? They, for many years, they've had less capacity than they needed. And I think that made it more difficult for them to do the kind of things that needed to be done. So, for example, they were not regularly scheduling senior decision makers like ED consultants into the emergency department at the weekends and out of hours. They should have been. They weren't, and now they are. So if you go to Waterford, go to Port Laois, go to the hospitals that have no patients on trolleys, there's senior decision makers there. If you walk in at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, if you walk in at 1 o'clock on a Saturday, there'll be an ED consultant or another senior person there. In Limerick, they might have had them rostered on call, but they weren't rostered in. They didn't have a strong patient flow team.
Not being rude, Minister, but the way that you describe the kind of problems that need, or rather the solution to the problems, sounds like the incremental improvement in efficiency of delivery. The problems that you face are what? 240 people who have died on trolleys in 5 years, at least two, and we can infer a lot more, deaths that have been caused as a direct function of overcrowding and medics being unable to give proper treatment. And Sinn Féin Senator Paul Gavin saying effectively that you are in denial about the quantum and nature of the challenge that you face.
Yeah, and as I pointed out to the Senator at the time, what he was saying was complete nonsense and is not backed up by the facts, because the facts are, we've invested in Limerick at a level that has never happened before. The hospital in the country that's had the most amount of extra money, both in percentage terms and cash terms, is Limerick. So just to give your listeners a sense, there are 1,200 more healthcare professionals working in that hospital today than there were when this government came in. That's about 430 more nurses. In the ED, they've gone from 10 to 15 ED consultants. We've more than doubled the number of NCHDs in the ED. We've added 108 beds and we're building about 200 more on site with more to come. So the team in Limerick quite rightly said, we urgently need more capacity. The government has responded. We've put in a lot more capacity. And what I'm saying in return is, yes, you needed more capacity. And it's either there or it's being built at the moment on site. But that's not enough. Capacity on its own doesn't fix the problem. I visit hospitals all over the country.
So reading between the lines, that means you're saying you've done your bit. Now it's over to the hospital.
What I'm saying very clearly is we are doing our bit. It's not done. There's 200 beds haven't opened yet, but they are being built. And what I'm saying is that the kind of changes we needed in that hospital, we are now beginning to see. We appointed a new regional executive officer, Sandra Broderick. We've sent in three of our most senior people in recent weeks, including Grace Rothwell, who was the chief executive who turned around University Waterford Hospital. We also sent in the director of nursing from Waterford. We sent in Ian Carter, a hugely experienced hospital manager who's turned hospitals around. And what we're seeing over the last few weeks is we're seeing the number of patients fall. So what I'm saying is exactly what HICWA said in their recent report, which is they needed more capacity. That capacity is either in place or physically being built at the moment. They needed a lot of reforms to how patients were being treated, and those reforms have now started. And the final thing, Anton, is what HICWA said, and I would fully agree with, is those reforms have started, but they have a ways to go. So that's exactly what we're working on.
Let me pick up on that ways to go. If you put in, as you describe, a team like that who is tasked with, in faring into what you say, turning the hospital around, undoubtedly you brief them by saying, I want this place turned around and made efficient and performing correctly, and I want it done by X. What's X? When is this going to happen?
Well, you can see the number of patients on trolleys now is falling. We sent in a team last year and it had a similar effect.
You didn't task them with general incremental improvement over an unending period of time. You must have a target date to say, look, by end of summer, by autumn?
We know it's right away. I mean, you can see the effect they're having within 2 weeks. You could see that the trolley started to fall. The other thing we did was I was in Limerick about 6 weeks ago, I'd say it was, and we've put another package of supports together. This is 86 more beds. It's 50 beds in Tipperary. It's 50 beds in Clare, which will be transitional beds so that patients can be discharged as quickly as possible. 16 more beds on site. So what we're seeing in other hospitals is working, right? We've expanded capacity across the board. We've changed the way patients are cared for, a lot more care in the community. And what we've seen this year, in spite of about 55,000 more people turning up to emergency departments so far this year, thousands less people have been on trolleys. The one exception to that really is Limerick, where the number of patients on trolleys has continued to grow. So the other thing that I've done is kicked off a review now on whether for the Midwest there should be a second emergency department. And if there is, that requires a second Model 3 hospital. But as I was saying in the Dáil or in committee just in the last few days, with the best will in the world, even if HICWA come back and say yes to a second emergency department, that takes years. We must and we can solve the problem of trolleys now.
How do you square that then with the recruitment freeze in the HSE? Because what you are detailing in terms of the solution to that problem was you threw bodies at it. Presumably the same is the case across the entire system. How can you do that if you've got a recruitment freeze?
Well, we added people and we added beds and we added a lot of other things as well. The recruitment pause is only there because the HSE was funded to hire 6,000 people last year, which would have been a record, and instead they hired 8,000 people. So if you look at Limerick to UHL today, there's about 43% more staff in the hospital than when I was appointed.
But you can't be looking at the HSE in general and saying it is overstaffed.
No, in UHL.
You said it was tasked to hire 6 at higher date. The logical assumption there is what you are saying is therefore they have overshot and you are waiting for the system to come back to capacity.
They did. They were funded for 6,000 staff and they hired 8,000 staff. And no school principal, no Garda sergeant, like people can't go out and just hire thousands of staff they're not funded to hire. We tried to get them to slow down, and unfortunately.
But these staff, one assumes, all immediately had roles that were necessary for them to deliver on. What does it matter if they overshot budget? If the need is there and it's being delivered on?
Because you have a budget allocated to education, allocated to health, allocated to defence. The various parts of the country need to work insofar as they can within their budgets. We know that health is always pressurised in terms of spending more money than it's allocated. But if you're funded for 6,000 posts, which
so finance got in touch and said yank the reins.
Which, by the way, was a record number of staff, and you hire 8,000 staff, you have to do something about that. But specifically to UHS, there are 1,200 more staff working in the hospital than there were at the time of this government. If you look at the emergency department, We have gone from 10 to 15 emergency medicine consultants. It's making a big difference. We've more than doubled the number of NCHDs or junior doctors in the emergency department. We've added a lot of nursing staff as well. So it's working. There's a ways to go. But in terms of capacity, UHL has never had the level of capacity it has right now.
Just briefly on this, because I want to move on to talk about the app and the implications for that. A consultant in emergency medicine has been raising concerns about the lack of pre-hospital emergency care in Ireland. And a text asking, can the minister explain why we are an outlier in Europe for pre-hospital emergency care?
I'd need to know more about what parts of it they're looking for, they're talking to. But let's look at the places we can go that mean we don't have to go into an emergency department. We can go to our GP. There have never been as many GPs, and GPs now have direct access to diagnostics. They didn't have it before.
But I assume this means kind of swift care, the intervention, the acute injury kind of clinics.
Yeah, but the first line of call is your GP. So GPs previously, like here in Greystones, if your GP said, look, I think you need an MRI, I think you need an X-ray, you need a CT scan, a lot of times they would have had no choice but to send you into the emergency department in Vincent's. Now they can just get you the scan themselves and you can be back with them in a matter of weeks. We've opened up several injury units around the country in the last while. In fact, the doctors in Wicklow will tell you that one of the best things that's happened in Wicklow is the change in Loughlinstown Hospital, which has an injury unit, and it is absolutely fantastic. So we have expanded injury units. We've expanded the opening hours of injury units. GPs have much more ability to treat their own patients rather than having to send them into hospitals. We've invested a lot more money in the National Ambulance Service. They're doing very well. So certainly in terms of places patients can go that mean you don't need to walk into an ED, it's in a much better place now than it was a few years ago.
The app that you are releasing, this, as I understand it, is to allow for the better sharing of medical records, obviously between healthcare providers, and also to allow patients to access their own medical records in the context of the HSE data security breach that we saw, with all of the implications that that has. Is this risky?
No, there's a huge amount of work has been done since that data breach. That data breach was catastrophic in terms of the disruption and the cost. So what we've been doing in the background of the HSE have been working very hard to put in place good, resilient systems, because we know that our systems, like healthcare systems around the world, will be constantly attacked by these groups. What we're doing now is saying we need to move to a healthcare service where we can all see our records, where we can all pull up our own X-rays, our own MRI, our own medications, our own prescriptions. And critically, if we go into our GP can pull up, well, you got an X-ray last week, or you got an MRI 2 months ago, I need to be able to pull that up. Or, you know, you're brought in by an ambulance into your local hospital. Maybe you can't talk, or maybe you're confused or whatever it might be, that they can immediately say, right, Anton Savage, we have your X-rays, we have your MRIs, we see the medication you're on, we know how to treat you. The patient app is a modest step in the right direction. So what we're doing now, it's being tested with a few hundred maternity patients. At the moment, we want it fully in place by the end of the year. So we'll all have...
Fully in place for maternity patients?
No, for everybody. For everybody.
For all medical records?
No, it's a modest first step this year, which is so limited records. So you'd have your medications, you'd have your allergies, the kind of things that the paramedic who arrives, or if you're brought in, it'd be very useful for them to see. You know, they'll be able to see, are you on any long-term medications? Do you have any underlying conditions?
And the ultimate aim is that the data controller, because obviously I imagine you're getting into tricky GDPR waters, the data controller is the patient themselves. It is their app that contains, or is it that it is shared across GP, acute system, step-down facilities, all hospitals?
In time, it will be shared. And we have a big piece of legislation, the Health Information Bill, coming in for exactly that reason. In time, we will have a central repository. So, you know, if you live in Clare, but you get in a car accident in Dublin, and you end up in St. Vincent's Hospital, they can immediately see. Now, critically, the patient app is this year's modest first step, but it's an important first step.
And when do we get to the
next year? Next year. So
your intent is that by the end of 2025, there will be this universal system of shared information across the agency?
Next year, we're going to see the biggest jump we'll ever have seen in terms of digital. So we're starting the procurement shortly. We hope to have awarded the contract by the end of this year. And by the end of next year, what we want is, they call it a shared care record, but this is the record whereby you can pull up your X-rays, your MRIs, your medications. It's going to make a huge difference. There is then a big longer term piece of work to digitize the health service. But for, in terms of what's going to matter to all of us walking around, walking into our doctor, walking into our hospital, by the end, we'll have the app this year. And then by the end of next year, for the doctor or the nurse or any of us to be able to pull up our scans, our medications, all of that stuff is going to be, it's going to be a big, big step forward.
We are obviously in the heat of an election campaign, this being the locals and the Europeans, and your party is finding itself in a lot of the papers for this unseemly spat between Neil Blaney and your party leader. What do you make of an MEP candidate having a go at your party leader through the media?
Well, so I haven't seen it, but Micheál Martin was in Greystones with Jack Cummins, our local candidate, and Cynthia Murica, our European candidate. So we were here, we were in Bray and we were in Greystones yesterday. So I was hearing about it from people who were there. Look, it seems it's not a good look. It's not the kind of thing you should do. I've been through several elections. Anyone going through elections will have things that they're happy about, things they're not happy about. You tend to keep them to yourself and just get on with it.
Well, whatever about a doorstep, just saying a press release is, I mean, that's really putting it up to him, isn't it?
It was certainly an unusual thing to do. What I can say is, I mean, it's everyone's interested and, you know, RT ran it. Now, you were talking about it this morning. What I can say is the energy here in Greystones and in Bray yesterday was fantastic. Now, your listeners will not have canvassed with Micheál Martin before, but the energy that that man brings is extraordinary. But there was great engagement. There was an awful lot of positivity. Positivity in Bray, positivity here in Greystones. I was down in Gorey yesterday as well.
I'm sure he wished he had the same positivity from his own candidate.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he does. But, you know, what's interesting is people seem to be, there's things they want to talk about. There's things they're not happy about. There's things they are happy about. But what they do, what they are appreciating is candidates being out and people like Micheál and myself and others being out.
Are you talking. Getting much in the way of aggression?
No, we're not getting any aggression. And, you know,
really?
No. And look, I've fought three general elections and the Irish people, I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, right?
We have seen it in your own, I mean, Newtown McKennedy as case in point. We've seen some fair aggression. The Guards dealing with some very, very difficult situations.
We have seen it. But I can tell you, I've knocked on a lot of doors in referendums and elections. By and large, people are very decent in Ireland. They'll either engage with you and have a chat with you, or they'll say, look, I'm just not interested. I hope we don't move to a place where it becomes more normal because, you know, we've seen some racist attacks on candidates and on their canvassers. And we must always fight back at that because, you know, our country is a great country. Yes, there are challenges, of course, there's challenges in health and housing and various other areas. But it is a wonderful country and we must protect people's ability to go out. People who are good enough and brave enough to get off their couch and say, I want to be a local councillor. I want to represent my town. I want to represent my community. It must always be safe for them to be and their volunteers to be able to knock on doors and talk to people.
To go back to where we started, this swim that you say you're going to be undertaking now, are you a quick dip man or is this going to be a commitment to a significant submersion? Will we see you heading towards Bray Head in the next half an hour?
I'd say now for the first few weeks, it'll be pretty quick. You know, you got to get used to it.
Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Minister Stephen Donnelly.
The Anton Savage Show with Kieries.ie on News Talk.